The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Stop Winking at Me by Daniel Rogers. Alora and Bob want me to volunteer, although for entirely different reasons. Heck, even Greenfo and Freena think it's a fantastic idea. Why am I the only sane person around here? Everyone knows it's a bad idea to volunteer to be a sacrifice. Alora believes it's the only way for us to obtain the Delanium inside the latter god's stormy abode. And I agree we need it. We're not flying off this rock without Delanium. My dispute is whether this is the only way. Bob believes I'm a god because I can say Bob. It's a long story. Anyway, he thinks I would have a great time reconnecting with my homies. Plus, he hopes I'll come back and tell him about it. Grinfo is puzzling. I'm not sure if he wants to see me honored or if he's sadistic and wants to see what will happen. Freena is a believer. She honestly sees it as a great honor. She'd volunteer if the gods allowed women to be a sacrifice. After everyone quit trying to persuade me, I had some time to think. What if the unmoving storm cloud isn't a ship chasing a chameleon shield? What if the ladder god is some monster that loves to eat ladder-climbing idiots? Or what if it's a hostile race that loves to shoot ladder-climbing idiots? There's no way of knowing until I climb and find out. Or is there? Bob met the gods. Could he shed some light on them? I found Bob sweeping his room. He stopped and asked, "What's on your mind?" "Am I that obvious?" I said. Bob motioned for me to take a seat. "You wear your emotions like I wear this robe. It doesn't take a shaman to see that you are wrestling with a decision." "Laura told you I was coming, didn't she?" Bob hit his head. "I forgot you're a god." "Speaking of gods, you said one of them gave you your name. Do you remember what he looked like?" "You know better than I do. You are one," Bob laughed. "There are many types of gods. Would you say the god you saw looked similar to me?" "Yes, very similar, except for his clothing. I've never seen anything like it." "At least I know the ladder god isn't a monster. I still don't know if they'll want me climbing their ladder, but I bet good money they won't eat me. Of course, they might shoot me." "When did this god arrive?" I asked, trying to get a better understanding of who I might meet up there. "The cloud showed up over 15 years ago. At that time, I was studying Kul'tun, a god who demanded a blood sacrifice. I really didn't want to plunge a knife into people, but I wanted to be a shaman. There's always something you won't like about a job. But when the latter god showed up, we all decided to worship him instead. Once I graduated, I quickly advanced in the ranks and became a shaman. Now all I have to do is escort the sacrifice to the ladder. No knife plunging." "What happens to the sacrifice?" "I'm not sure. I like to think they're having a good time, but I suppose the gods could have killed them. They do love to do that. But hey, at least I don't have to." "What if I volunteered? Would you escort me?" Whoa, it's not that easy. You must compete for the honor. Only the most worthy will ascend the ladder." Bob went on describing the Pick a Sacrifice tournament and the challenges I'd face. Only 77 hopefuls could complete each year. My ears perked up. The more he described the obstacles, the more at ease I became. My chances of making it into the group of 77 looked unlikely. The tournament wasn't made for galactic surveyors. The way I see it, I really don't stand a chance. Bob could see me relax. Your emotions betray you. I can see you think you've already won. Well, I can't say anything. You are a god after all, so this must seem like child's play to you. Well, you caught me, Bob. Where do I sign up? Bob took me through the ritual to put my name into the hat, which involved goat's milk, spider webs, and chocolate. I won't go into details, but I'll say that these people eat some unusual things. After entering, I was sent back to my room to meditate. Alora found me in my room. So, you entered. Good. Now I hope you're selected. How are the 77 chosen, did Bob say? He didn't say anything, but he winked at me a lot while I was going through the ritual. Maybe that was part of the ritual. Or maybe it was Bob being Bob. He is a bit odd, but I feel like he was trying to communicate. I shook my head. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Well, it doesn't matter. You either will or you won't. If you don't, we need to figure out how to obtain the delanium some other way. Do you have any ideas? I shook my head. Then let's hope you get picked. At sunrise, I walked out into the temple grounds like Grinfo instructed me. When I arrived, I found hundreds already there. I smiled secretly inside. There was no way I'd make it. The temple doors opened and the shaman walked out. The crowd bowed. I caught myself in the nick of time and joined them. Grinfo walked out behind the shaman, holding a scroll. He opened it and began to read. The great shaman, in his holy wisdom, has selected the 77. I groaned inside. Bob is the judge? His winking came to mind. When I read your name, stand under the righteous tree and wait for further instructions. If I don't read your name, please exit the temple grounds. Perhaps you'll do better next year. Grinfo read, and I tensed with each name called out. Why did he wink at me? The question circled in my mind. Drew Williams, Grinfo said with a smile. That's why he winked at me. I walked under the righteous tree, wishing he hadn't winked at me. I've got a bad feeling about this, but I still have 76 chances of not making it, as long as Bob stays out of it. Now what are the chances of that? The Speck by Ted Scott. I learned about the North Star when I was just a boy at Christmas. My dad asked me to help with Christmas lights on the farmhouse roof. The sun had just dipped behind the hills when the last strand was hung. Dad went to grab the extension cord that was already plugged in at the back of the house. He pulled it over to where we were sitting, next to the garret window at the very top. All right, he said, while tying a knot to marry the cords together. Here goes nothing. When the plug went into the extension, the lights gave a warm glow over the dark pastures. We could see the cows and sheep a good distance away. My dad gave the animals a loud whistle. Hey, how's the view from down there? The herd and flock responded in unison, making us both laugh. Dad tapped my shoulder. See that there? He asked, pointing to the stars with a beautiful moon. Yeah, I said. Now point to me the North Star. North Star? I asked. I had no idea what he was talking about. Yeah, it's the one star that doesn't move, he said to my blank face. All the other stars just dance around it. All I saw was white dots in the sky. See, look, he said to me as he straightened his arm in front of my face so he could direct me to exactly which one. That one right there. You see it? How do you know that's the North Star? I asked. I thought you'd never ask, he said as he bumped my shoulder. He pointed a bit away from the North Star. You see that little piece of stars? Looks like a cooking pot with a bent handle, right? That there's the Big Dipper. He pointed to the front side of the pot. See those two stars there? Yeah, I said. He showed me how the two stars attached to the Big Dipper were a guide to true north. Those two stars always lead the way. Wow, I said as I looked in fascination. Yep. My daddy taught me that, and now you know, he said, bumping a finger on my forehead. Wait, I said, still confused. What do you mean the other stars dance around it? Well, it took him a moment to gather how to explain. Even though it doesn't look like these stars are moving at all, the Earth is spinning over 800 miles an hour on its axis. So all these other stars are moving, he said, waving his hands at the other stars. You're about to ask why it doesn't move, right? It's because the North Star sits right over the top of the world. Dad could read the confusion on my face. That means if you and I sat out here all night, we'd see all the other stars move. He paused and pointed directly at the North Star. Except that one right there. I sat leaning on Dad, looking up at the stars with his arm around my shoulders. We could have sat up there for hours without a word being said, with the cool breeze blowing our hair and crickets singing. Dad sighed. My daddy stared up at that thing more times than I could count. Any problem he had, I guess that was the cure for it, just looking up all those years. He didn't come off as angry. Resentful was a better way to put it. I looked over to Dad as the dark blue started to paint on his face. Dad? He exhaled and then sniffed. Yep. Thanks for showing me, I said. He looked down to me with a smile. He sniffled again, then said, Not a problem at all, my boy. Dad hardly ever showed a soft side. That was one of those rare moments. He pulled my head close and kissed my bowl cut. Come on, let's go fix you some supper. We both got up from the roof and crawled back through the garret window. I could fit through it, though it was a struggle for adults, roughly the size of a large pizza box. As I grew up, Dad seemed to take every chance he could to look at the stars through that little opening. Through the hard times, looking at the North Star was what felt most humbling. He had a stroke when I turned 18, and his health went downhill from there. I had to hire a nurse to take care of him after I graduated. I was able to take care of him in the summertime. The last few months he was alive, he wasn't the same person anymore. He would keep repeating things over and over. North Star's the place to go. No fooling. Door's always open. Yes, sir, that cedar door always open. Full moon, then the cracks. Full moon, then the cracks. Yes, indeed. His stutter was haunting. Our last conversation circled the same way. Oh, just you wait. Moon's a-coming out tonight. That door's just gonna pop up. No fooling. Just gonna break open straight away to the North Star. Yes, sirree, you just wait. The next morning, I went to help get him out of bed. He was gone, the bed empty. No note, no sign of struggle, nothing. The police searched for weeks. Investigators came and went, but they never found a single lead. So I guess I got obsessed with stargazing all the same. Some nights I would lie in that room watching the moon and stars. The garret was his favorite room. The moon would shine bright against the wall and slowly shed a dim blue box shape along the cedar wall next to me. The room had a boundary of tranquility that couldn't be matched outside of it. The garret was a small room that could hardly fit a twin-size bed tucked under the roofing of the farmhouse with a small window. We used it for storage when I was young and cleared it out for Dad when he had his stroke. We added brown carpet to the floor and insulation to the roofing, covering it with cedar planks. The cedar carried a warm scent of sap, dry and smoky, like cinnamon apples over a campfire, the closest thing my memory can name. There was also a small hole in the wall from an old knot in the wood. Dad had grown up in this house. His father had built it from the ground up and passed away before I was born. It wasn't a wealthy place, but it was home. As I lay, a small whirring started to grow into a soft humming against the wall. It didn't sound like it was on the other side of the wall, more like it was coming from a part of the wall itself. And that's when I noticed. The sound was coming from the dim outline of the shed in moonlight. The light on the wall slowly became brighter as the ground began to vibrate in unison with the humming behind the cedar. There was no room beyond that wall, nor on any other wall in the garret. It was simply a staircase leading to four walls with two of them slanted with the roof, and then nothing but open air outside. As the shine on the wall turned brighter, it began to take form into a bigger shape, bigger than the frame of the window. It shaped itself into the size of a door. The hole in the cedar began to glow, piercing white beam stretching across the room. Then humming and quakes continued when the hole couldn't get any brighter until a quick snap and then dark and quiet. The humming and shaking stopped. I stared at the wall in silence, trying to understand what I had witnessed. The wood began to creak like slow steps in a hollow cabin. The creaks turned to cracks and snaps. The planks began to split loudly, each one giving way. The cracks shaped themselves into the outline of the door the moon had shown. When the cracking stopped, the hole in the wall started to glow with a dim light of moonlit snow. That spot in the cedar left a perfect place for a doorknob. I hesitated, then pressed a finger through the hole. It moved. The door slowly opened as a misty, cool draft shifted the temperature in the room. Behind it was the sky, not seen from the north-facing window to the garret. It was an entirely different galaxy of stars. Dusty clouds splashed bright violet across a twilight canvas. There was no count to them. A door leading to another universe had opened in the room where my father vanished. When I stepped closer to the door, it wasn't just a portrait. I could touch. It was an entire new dimension, completely different. The stars grew in number, expanding in countless wonder as I stepped closer, surrounded by brilliant dusty splashes of lavender and northern light green. Below all those stars sat a familiar image of the roofing of the farmhouse. Our farmhouse. This door didn't just lead to another dimension. It led to a dimension where our farmhouse roof was the vantage point to the magnificent spectacle above. All that I saw seemed to give me déjà vu. I was familiar with this very scene. It was like pictures in a book from a distant memory. When I stepped out of the garret and onto the roof, all the sounds I had heard from the garret, from every cricket to every wind-blown whisper, slowly began to absorb in the spatial atmosphere. Quite the sight, isn't it? I jumped, shrieking as I turned. I lost my balance and started to fall off the roof when a hand grabbed my shoulder, steadying me. When I saw who it was, I screamed again. "It's okay, son. I know, it's me," he said, trying to console me. "It's Dad." It was Dad, relaxed, fresh, nothing like the way he was after his stroke or when he disappeared. He was clean-cut and calm, like he was from another whole world. He grabbed my shoulders and pressed me down. "Now sit." And I did. I was speechless, as if I'd seen a ghost. He sat staring up at the stars. He spoke words to me while I was deafened by shock. His lips were moving, but I just heard mumbling. I couldn't gather words to respond. I could only stare at him in amazement. When he nudged my shoulder, it shook me out of my spell. He pointed up and said, "See that there?" He pointed directly to what I knew as the North Star, Polaris. I had seen it countless times. He taught me how to find it using the Big Dipper as a guide to the true north. "The North Star. Wrong." He barked like a game show buzzer, bumping my shoulder, making me laugh. He laughed with me and pointed again. "No, no. That's Earth, see? That's home, believe it or not." I stared at what looked like a star from where we were sitting, a pinhole through a sea of black with colorful overcast, surrounded by millions more. "Wait," I paused and pointed. "If that's Earth, then where is the North Star?" Dad chuckled. "Get comfortable, my boy. You're sitting on it." I turned my gaze toward the ground below the roofing, looking for our fresh-cut grass and beautiful pastures beyond, but they weren't there. All that was there was shining lights of dust with hot gas, all pulling the gravity of a single farmhouse held in place. I watched him lie back on the roof, hands behind his head, sighing as if he'd just finished a long day's work. I laid back with him without a care in the world. "Do you remember that night?" he asked. "What night?" "I showed you how to find it," he asked. "How to find the North Star?" "Are you kidding?" "Of course I do," I said without hesitation. "We were putting up Christmas lights, and when we plugged them in, you asked the crows and the sheep how they looked." "Murr, bad," Dad interrupted, making them both laugh. "Yeah, that was fun, wasn't it?" I agreed with laughter, drawing tears in my eyes. There wasn't any sadness in loss. It was home, nestled on a star, surrounded by infinite others. Dad slowly turned his smile into a subtle grin. "I looked up to this thing all those years," he said, "disappointed almost. I had hopes and dreams for most of it, just like my daddy did." He paused. Then he said, "Failed to see the hopes and dreams that came true down there, back home." My smile went away as I couldn't speak, while tears started to make my eyes burn and fall down my face. He turned to me. "I'm a stubborn man, you know that." He paused. "But if there's one thing in the world I'm sorry for, it's that." His voice cracked. My vision blurred with tears, seeing the purple glow of the stars glistening across his face. I wanted to beg him, "Please come back home with me." He interrupted my train of thought as he put his arm around my shoulders and kissed my head. "Ain't no need to come looking for me anymore, son. I'm sitting right here." He looked back toward the speck called Earth. "Funny, all the problems I had there seem so big," he pondered with a grin. "Made me forget how small they were from up here." How easy it is, I thought. We fall for making our troubles bigger than they actually are. I looked up with him when he said, "Don't ignore the world around you down there, son. If you need me, I'll be right here." That was when I woke up in the bed, back in the garret, in the dark, with crickets singing outside the window, with navy blue pastures below, dotted with fireflies, drifting in the cool breeze under the pale moon. I wiped my face, got up and stared at the wall, washed in moonlight, waiting for the room to vibrate and the cedar planks to crack again, waiting for the hidden latch to reveal itself, hoping to see my dad again. But the room had looked the same as before, with the exception of the smell, that fried apple smell in the cedar. It was gone. The smell in the garret now was old and dusty without its sweet signature. The haven of tranquility I once knew made me come to the realization. He told me, ain't no need to keep looking for me anymore. I had been looking for him for years. I had clung to that beautiful smell, a smell in the cedar that reminded me that all was well in the valley. But I was so stubborn that I ignored the fact that the cedar smell died along with him in that room. I had seen what I needed to see. There would always be time to dwell on what I had lost, but I wasn't getting any younger. All that we know and love is held down on a blue ball, and the one thing constant is the North Star. I knew then that all the good in the world cannot be made to stand still in time. I had to let him go. I walked to the wall, gave it a soft knock as a kiss goodbye, and looked into the dark room where my father had slept. Then I headed for the stairs leading down, a lump rising in my throat, knowing this would be my last time here. Behind me, I wanted to hear the faint whirring and humming to begin and see the walls crack. But I knew that I was better, knowing that the dreams I had were just a fool's bliss. So I kept walking, stepping out of the garret with broad shoulders and my soul smiling without a care in the world. The last story for today, after I rearrange my paper, it's called Waking in the Opaque by Chai Rucker. His feet were wet. That's the first thing he noticed. The only first thing he could have noticed. Only silent, still darkness surrounded him. He knew this was an odd situation, but he wasn't sure how or why. The man searched for memories that seemed just outside his reach. He tried to recall his name, where he was, and where he'd come from, how and why he'd come to stand in the puddle of total darkness. But his memories were as impenetrable as the darkness enveloping him. "Why can't I remember my name?" he thought. Breathing slowly and deeply, he tried to calm the throbbing in his temples. He heard the sound of air crossing his lips as he sucked in. That satisfied one desperate curiosity. He may have gone blind, but he wasn't deaf. The man reached his arms out into the space before him. Only cool, wet air greeted his outstretched hands. He slid one foot forward through the ankle-deep water, hands still searching the black. The floor felt like slick rubber, maybe a butyl membrane used to waterproof the room. Great, useless information about butyl rubber I can recall. The sound of his feet sliding through the water died without an echo, but it was answered by the hurried sound of something else moving nearby. Whatever caused the splash, it hadn't moved further. Much as he had done, it stopped to listen. Perhaps, also like him, it listened in fear of his movements, wondering about his intentions. Maybe it hunted him, just waiting to strike. For all he knew, he was blind and was only being toyed with in full sight of his antagonist. He held his breath to hide and to hear the slightest movement, but his throbbing headache intensified, filling his ears with the sound of his own heartbeat. He gasped, surprised at the migraine's sudden ferocity. Another nearby disturbance caused a splash of water. He felt the tiny waves ripple around his ankles. It had moved toward him, but again it stopped. He could almost sense the creature listening, probing the darkness for him. Behind him, three quick splashes crashed through the water. This one moved away, perhaps other fearful prey. Then the first creature moved again, more aggressively this time. It seemed to stop just 10 feet away. It panted, a slight rattle in its breathing. "Hello?" asked the creature. It was an older woman. Her voice cracked and she gulped after speaking. She sounded just as afraid as he was. "Please," she continued, "do you remember? Because I can't seem to." The pain and fear in her voice were too much to ignore. Anyway, if something stalked them in the dark, perhaps it was better to have safety in numbers. "No, ma'am, do I know you? I'm... he stammered. "No, I'm afraid I don't remember anything." "Oh, I'm sorry. Where are we? I'm so frightened." "I don't know that either." Behind him, long strides pushed through the water. Whatever had retreated earlier advanced now. He wasn't sure if it was another person or a stalking animal. And even if it was another person, would they be friend or foe? "What's that?" the older woman cried. "Wait," he said, "I'm coming to you." He slid his feet across the smooth, rubbery surface. He thought it must be a floor, but still feared tripping over something in the zero light. "It's okay," a deep voice announced. "I'm no danger. I'm just as confused as you folks." "All right," the man said to the other man. "Keep heading toward our voices. Ma'am, continue speaking, please, until we find you." "Oh, I," she began, "I'm not sure what to say." "That's okay," answered the other man. "Try singing." All right. She sounded comforted, as though she'd found an acring memory in this storm of uncertainty. "This is an old one, hundreds of years old, but you probably heard it just the same." She began to sing about eyes and disguises. The man found himself smiling in spite of the situation. She sang an ancient popular song that was now a lullaby. "Wonderful," he thought, "another unhelpful memory." "Ma'am, don't be startled. I'm reaching for you now." The older woman never stopped singing, but as he reached for her, the man found her hands reaching back. Comforted by the touch of another person, he had held her hand as they waited for the other man. The other man said, "Oof," as he abruptly stopped moving. "Sorry," said the other man. "Are you okay?" "There's someone else?" asked the man. "Yes," answered the other man. Then he whispered, "Are you all right?" No one answered the other man. He asked them more than once, but they never responded. The other man splashed as he moved toward them once more. "Please sing or speak some more until I find you," the other man said. The older woman went on to sing about stuttering to her tired friend in the cold and damp and something about a warm wind. The man said, "That's beautiful, ma'am. Your voice is lovely." The man could hear the older woman's smile as she sang. Her singing warmed him in his dark and frightening situation. It may not be helpful in remembering anything else, but the woman singing that lonesome old lullaby gave him a buoy to cling to. "I think they're sleeping," said the other man. "I tried to wake them, but they wouldn't stir." As he reached his hand up toward the other man, he answered, "You heard them breathing?" The other man caught his hands. Then the other man placed one large hand on his shoulder. "I did," answered the other man. "It's odd, sleeping while standing up." "You know who you are or why you're here?" asked the man. "And do you know us?" added the older woman. "No, I'm sorry," the other man answered. "I heard the two of you speaking before. I'm just as confused as you are." "I'm honestly not sure what to do," said the man. "Other than the person you ran into, we seem to be alone in a room with water up to our ankles. I'm just not sure what to do with that." "I'm glad you two are here, though," said the older woman, relief in her voice. They agreed before falling into thoughtful silence. After a few moments, the man felt the other man stroke the material covering his shoulder. "Maybe that's something," the other man said more to himself before continuing. "You're wearing the same thick shirt the other person, and I'm..." They heard the other man run his hand over his own shirt. "Yes," the other man went on, "I'm wearing the same. It's more of a bodysuit than a shirt." The man and the older woman felt over their clothes and agreed. "Feels like a diving suit," the older woman said. "Okay, great," the man said. "What does that tell us?" The other man and the older woman didn't respond. They all felt the weight of another unhelpful discovery. "Where am I and why can't I see?" called a voice some distance away. Other voices answered from the other direction. "Who is that and what's happening here?" Several others shouted, "Help, please, someone help me." "Everyone," shouted the man, "please stay calm." "Who are you?" a nearby woman asked. "What have you done to me?" "Yes, what's happened here?" "I don't know," shouted the man. "I'm as confused as you are." The room fell silent. He took that to mean they were at least listening. "I don't know who I am, and I don't know where we are or why we're here. But several of us have gathered here. If you can make your way to us, perhaps we can work together to figure this out." Many voices responded at once. Some thought he may be tricking them, while others were concerned with walking through the dark. Finally, one voice cut through the din. "I'll come to you." Then another. "Me too, I'm on my way." The sound of sloshing steps rose around them, and so did the voices of dissent. Not as loud as before, but it seemed to be gaining volume quickly until someone else yelled, "Quiet!" The voices ceased, and those that had been walking stopped. "If you wish to stay where you are, fine, but shut up if you are." Another moment of silence ruled the room before the same voice called out again, "Mister, you or someone in your group speak up so we can find you." "Oh, yes," the man said. "Ma'am, sing your song again." Then he shouted, "Yes, follow the lullaby." The older woman sang the song again. Her lilting phrases, "A blind man's lighthouse." Instantly, the sound of sloshing filled the air. Some of the disembodied voices rose again, deciding not to respect the call for silence, but they did speak more quietly this time. "Somehow, this is even more surreal," thought the man. "A dark room full of lost souls searching out a siren's song." "I know this song," someone called. Then from much closer, "Oh, yes, it's 20th century grunge." "I love this old song," someone said, more to themselves. The other voices fell away, leaving the space to fill with the sound of splashing water and the older woman singing "Black Hole Sun." They absorbed the song like an old friend, holding on to the comfort of the familiar. It was just an old song, first sung long before any of them had been born, but they knew it. They remembered it. "What's that?" a far voice yelled. "I don't know. It just flew over my head," someone answered. "What are they talking about?" asked the man. "I don't know," answered the older woman. "No," added the other man, "I didn't hear it either." Screams and bodies splashing to the floor swelled toward the man. He braced himself as something flew over his head, chattering and whirring. A frightened wave of startled people continued past him, following the unseen bird monster flying on in search of prey. "I've heard it now," shouted the other man, "and it can't be good." "What was that?" asked the older woman. "Stay close," the man yelled. "Everyone, come to the sound of my voice. We'll fight together." The sound of water splashing and bodies colliding filled the pitch black. Even those who had scoffed at coming to the man's location before now seemed to better of it. Some still complained. Fight? In this darkness? But even those people moved toward the man as they replied. As people gathered around them, the older woman and the other man, the whirring creature buzzed overhead. It crisscrossed above them, chirping as it flew by and sounding more agitated with each pass. The bedlam quieted as they coalesced. Arms on shoulders and around waists, the community of darkness held its collective breath. The monster continued to sweep over the crowd, but they no longer screamed in panic as it went. They wondered what the bird monster might do now, and they hoped the group was too large for the creature. They wished it would fly off in search of easier prey, but it wasn't to be. The bird monster whirred by them again before stopping somewhere over the crowd. People there yelled curses and threats at the thing. The man imagined some were waving their arms overhead in a violent, albeit blind, attempt to frighten off the beast. A woman screamed over the shouts and shocked silence took the crowd. The same woman yelled, "It stung me!" Others said, "We've got you. It's okay. It stung me in the neck." Her voice shook, racked with terror. Then she said, "Oh, no." "What? What's wrong?" others asked. "I'm dizzy," she answered. I have you," came a man's voice. "She's fallen. I think she's passed out." "Poison," someone else shouted. Another agreed. "Yes, it must have been a poison stinger. It's some kind of giant wasp." The creature whirred over the blinded, terrified people again. When it stopped, it hovered no more than 20 feet from the man. People under the hovering attacker tried to escape, shoving and pushing as they moved to get away. The violent reaction sent ripples of colliding bodies radiating out from those trapped under the thing. A man screamed in pain, then yelled, "It stung me! Please help! I don't want to die!" "We need to do something," said the other man. "I agree," said the man, "but what do we do?" Before we could answer, a series of loud clunks sounded high above them. Slowly, light from the ceiling began illuminating the large room. The lights hummed as they struggled to brighten. Even the weak light blinded the community of darkness. The man saw the older woman, a short, pale, elderly woman, and the other man, a tall, dark-skinned man in his 40s, shielding their eyes as the light intensified. He shielded his own eyes and wondered why they looked familiar. The man ducked as the whirring bird monster flew over. After it passed, he saw the thing was a metal sphere with 3 articulating arms sprouting from its head. He watched in horror as it stopped over a younger woman, lowered one long arm, and injected her with a needle. The younger woman stumbled back from the flying sphere. She gasped, holding her neck and gawking at her attacker. Then her eyelids rolled back and she fell in a lump and as with a splash. Seeing the attack caused terror to ripple through the group. Some screamed while others sprinted for the darker corners of the room, but they were in a room and the man didn't think there was a viable escape. "It's a drone," shouted the other man. The man nodded. That seemed like a right name. "Get ready," the man yelled. "We have to take it down." The drone returned, flying toward the man and stopping above someone just 10 feet away. The man and the other man looked at each other and nodded. Then they sprinted and leaped for the drone, their arms raised. They each grabbed an arm and flung the drone to the ground. Then they kicked and stomped their attacker until it stopped shaking and chattering. They backed away to view the destruction. Then those around them cheered and patted the man and the other man on the back. Soon the community of darkness shouted thanks and praises to the two men. The whirring of several more drones cut the celebration short. They coalesced again, this time creating a ring facing out. The man and the other man had shown them what to do. They wouldn't cower anymore. 5 drones circled the ring of the lost. The people faced them even as their eyes adjusted to the brightening lights, and the drones seemed reluctant to enter the ring. "Just tell me when it is working," a man's distorted voice blasted over speakers. "I'm on now." The speaker sounded frustrated and confused. The speaker sighed and continued, "Passengers, please stay calm. I know you're feeling disoriented, but if you allow the drones to replace your memories, I promise the situation will become clear." The man looked around and found his suspicion reflected on other faces. The other man and the older woman both looked back at him with the same distrust. Silence filled the room before startled gasps came from several people. Those that were stung earlier began sitting up. As the drone victim's eyes cleared, they didn't look frightened anymore. In fact, as they stood, they seemed aggravated more than anything. Without a word, the drone victims walked across the room with purpose. The man couldn't make out anything in that direction, but he still couldn't see the walls either. "Do yourself a favor," said a large man walking by. "Get your memory injection and move on with your day." A stern-faced woman followed the large man. As she passed, she added, "We've arrived at Vistas. They just screwed up when we got here." "You're damn right they screwed up," someone else interjected, "and I'm going to sue." The speaker spoke again at this, sounding worried and embarrassed. Yes, folks, we've arrived at Planet Vistas. We apologize for the inconvenience. A nearby solar storm disrupted our systems and thereby the waking process as well." "I don't understand," said the man. "Why would they take our memories?" Before the speaker could respond, the younger woman attacked by the drone earlier spoke up. "Memory removal decreases the chance of severe night terrors during stasis sleep." The man watched as she moved on with the other drone victims. They reached the other end of the room, and bright light flooded in as a door opened. People in orange jumpsuits waited in the hallway with beverages. The other man rested his hand on the man's shoulder. "I think this must have been a misunderstanding." The man worried as he looked around the room, but he had to admit it was difficult to argue with after seeing the drone's victims get up. They all seemed to understand afterward. They all seemed to remember. The other man looked above the man, then he looked down and nodded up. The man turned around, and the drone pierced his neck with a syringe. His head swam and his vision blurred. He sat down in the water. The man felt the slick butyl rubber under his fingers. Then he laid down and fell back into darkness.